Good afternoon. It's Thursday, the 8th of May. I've done it again.
Yes.
It's the 8th of June, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Apologies, a few minutes delay there can only be due to cyber leprechauns. But here we are on Election Day 2017, and there can only be one message to the nation, and it's this. Let June be the end of May.
Yes.
And as Ian Crane has been saying in his recent broadcast, it's very important that people do get out and vote today because what we need is time for the nation. And the only way we're going to buy time is by making sure that Theresa May, better known as Treason May, is not elected. So it's up to all of us to get out there and make our votes count. This is not a solution, it's simply buying time until enough people can be applied to the task to produce a proper change in this country, and that is restoring common law. It's taking control of our money supply system, and it's starting to bring true law and order back into the United Kingdom. Well, it's quite amazing to have a look at the papers at the moment because we have no idea what's going to come up, really. Things seem particularly close at the moment, hence the need for people to go out and vote. But here's The Guardian. Corbyn and May cast votes as polls point to Tory win. Well, do they? This is what interested us. Across the UK media today, we seem to have our election replaced by cartoon images. It's quite noticeable. It's across all of the papers. We're going to see some of the more outspoken front pages in a moment. But The Guardian also included a segment here on people's dogs at polling stations.
This is all over the internet, the dogs outside polling stations.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not just the odd image. It is as though the whole of mainstream media has been tasked to actually disrupt people's minds and proper thinking patterns.
Well, they've certainly disrupted the weather.
Indeed.
Yeah. Because it is the best kind of weather for voting day, isn't it? Get people out. But let's look at the front pages then. Express, absolutely clear. Vote for May today. The Daily Mail, absolutely clear. With a nice big picture of Theresa May. Let's reignite British spirit. Because you're only demonstrating your British spirit if you vote for Theresa May, Brian.
Yeah, I would disagree with that.
Well, that, yes. This Daily Star, Tezza versus Jezza. Which one has the Brexit factor for you? So they bring the conversation to the highest level at every opportunity. The Daily Mirror, lies, damned lies, and Theresa May, one of very few that are actually suggesting anything other than
this. This is just like comic books, Mike, have been unleashed on the public. This is extraordinary. It's orchestrated. It's calculated. This is not accidental.
Absolutely. The Sun takes the biscuit. Because don't chuck Britain in the core bin, is what they say. We've had enough of Jez's rubbish, so lots of bin themes there. This reminds me of the don't switch off, with the last person to leave the country, switch off the light bulb.
Yeah.
They swung the election then. I don't think they're going to swing the election this time. But the Telegraph, your country needs you. The Tory graph you would expect to be supporting Theresa May. What a number of people were commenting on. If you look at the right-hand column there, there's a column headed, Corbyn would not be allowed into security services. So, you know, why should he be in number 10? And who has written that? Well, a number of people, Peter O'Born, George Monbiot, commenting that it's outrageous that a former MI6 chief would intervene like this in a general election. Very serious and ugly meddling with British democracy. So let's have a look and see what it actually says. It says, today, Britain goes to the polls, and frankly, I'm shocked I'm not even going to bother with it, because it's a diatribe against Corbyn. I'm not certain that anybody is ever ex-MI6, Brian.
Absolutely not. But remarkable, it's the same MI6, MI5, SO13, that simply didn't know that we had child abusers working in Westminster. So the very people that can't spot child abuse going on in Westminster and in the establishment are the people that now stand up and point a finger at Corbyn. It's outrageous, and these people should be brought to book. Perhaps we should bring in Patrick Henningsen here. Patrick, I'm going to say I don't think I've ever seen anything as, I'll say childish, that's an insult to children, but as cartoon-like, it's childish. I think there's a massive psychological operation going on here, which is designed to destabilise the public, unsettle them, confuse their minds in the lead-up to this election. Is that too far-fetched, do you think?
No, take the media, take the lead from the mainstream media here, and it says it all. Just look at the newsstand. Look at what they're putting out on their front covers. And so what this tells us is that politics, as we once knew it, politics as usual, not even politics as usual, politics as we once knew it, it's gone. It's finished. Now it's personal attacks, ad hominem attacks. It's the law of the jungle. Because no one can bear the thought of losing. So, you know, whoever's nastiest will win. This is the new politic of the 21st century. So I think it is also interesting looking at how many of those papers, mainstream publications, are endorsing or telling people to vote for the status quo, the government in power. That's interesting. So if you are anti-establishment, then it's pretty clear where your vote is probably going to be aligned in this election. So, but they don't see it like that. They see it like this. We have strength on our side. So, you know, we have the money, we have television, we have the newspapers, we have the media. So we'll tell you how to vote.
It's still not quite as personal and as sort of direct as U.S. politics, though.
Yeah, that was a new level of nastiness in the United States. So we set a whole new standard for a dirty election, not just the election, even after the election. There's, you know, conspiracy theories and hoaxes about Russia hacking the U.S. election. This is still being churned out months and months after, and years probably after this election. So this is a new low. The whole Brian, as you said, the whole system is completely coming apart at the seams. Look at the behavior of the media. Look at the behavior of politicians. Everybody's completely losing it. They don't know how to sort of conduct themselves professionally anymore. Zero standards, lying left, right, and center, and as dirty as it's ever been.
Yeah,
as dirty as it's ever been. Well, let's come back to the illustrious Theresa May and Newspeak, because this seems to be all this lady can produce. I've just got a couple of things here, but this is one of them. Britain's face a choice at the election between herself, that is, and Jeremy Corbyn leading the country into the future. We need to be led into the future. And it's not just getting Brexit right, but also ensuring we have a vision for the future. So reporters picking up on the fact that this lady does not talk normally. She doesn't analyse. She doesn't discuss subjects normally. What we've got is this highly politicised newspeak coming out of her. This is not a woman who's going to take the country anywhere. She's simply going to do as she's told, Mike, which is why she's so dangerous, I think.
Yep.
And then she's bragging that her husband has been out campaigning, but he hasn't been in the same areas as her. He's actually been in other locations. So we'll just do this one as well. We've got her saying this election campaign has never been, has seen two terrible terrorist attacks taking place. And I hope that people will go out to vote to show that our democracy will not be deterred by the terrorists. And I will say the terrorists who are actually running Britain. So we are in very difficult times. Who is the most dangerous at the moment out of Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn? It's got to be Theresa May, because as Home Secretary, she has built one of the most Stasi-like organisations ever seen in the world, backed up, of course, by millions of CCTV cameras and databases. So a dangerous woman. Now, what are her potential candidates like? Well, yesterday we said that we'd seen very briefly Johnny Mercer, Conservative candidate in Plymouth, out campaigning. There was apparently a bus parked on this roundabout, a minibus. When we went to see if we could capture some images, we couldn't. But today we saw a remarkable sight, which we were able to capture on camera. So let's just see whether this one will run. And having seen a gentleman on the bridge, I thought it best to get up closer with my camera. I think you'll be intrigued. This is the state of conservative campaigning. Raining very hard. Okay, there we are. So we've got a gentleman standing up with his banner saying that we should vote for Johnny Mercer. A few cars coming up the hill, one or two honking their horn, whether that was because they saw Satan or a Viking standing on the bridge, I don't know. But that was the state of it. So here he is, just in case you didn't really pin it down in the video. We don't know this gentleman's name. There he is. I saw this a little bit later, and I'm going to come on to this one. I don't know whether these two are related at all, Mike. Do you think they might be?
It's quite possible.
Seem to have the same helmets on. I feel sorry for the cat in the picture, because if you expand this image, you'll see the cat almost saying, I can't believe this is real. I can't take any more.
Yeah.
This is the state of politics. Now, where it gets very serious is that as I approached this gentleman on the bridge, it was apparent to me that... a lady who was with him was parked in a car park, presumably had given him a lift there. And so I decided to speak to her, and I asked her how she could support a Conservative Party that was simply doing nothing about child abuse. And we talked about child abuse in Westminster. We also talked a little bit about the military. At this point, the Viking, I will call him the Viking, returned to the car. He didn't have a great deal to say. They told me they were both ex-military. I said they should be ashamed due to the record of David Cameron in slashing Britain's armed forces. But then, remarkably, at that point, they asked me what I was going to vote. Now, as Ian Crane has said, I find this difficult to say, but I'm going to vote Labour today in Gary Streeter's constituency, which is a Tory stronghold. That is my protest. There are perhaps other ways of tackling it, but I told these two that I was going to vote Labour, whereupon the lady said anti-Semitic. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, Labour is anti-Semitic. And I said, but we've been talking about child abuse. I'm not speaking anymore, she said. So the message from Johnny Mercer's campaign team is that anyone who dares to vote Labour is voting for an anti-Semitic party and is presumably anti-Semitic themselves. And on the subject of child abuse, Mike, I thought this was outrageous. I have never experienced anything like this before. And Patrick, this is always an emotive issue, but I felt this was some of the dirtiest politics that I've ever come across in this country. Absolutely outrageous. In fact, I'm nearly speechless about it.
I'm speechless too after watching, seeing the get up that gentleman was wearing this morning. Is pretty shocking, Brian. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll follow through with the gentleman with the pussycat and the tinfoil hat. Well, should we just bring him back on screen? That image actually follows with this article from The Telegraph. And this is another what I'll call cartoon. It's a psyop. Use pen, social media mocks election rigging fears over votes cast with a pencil. Now, this is because, quite rightly, many people have got highly suspicious about the accuracy of our election process. And many people said, well, if they're rigging votes and you make a cross with a pencil, you're making it pretty easy for votes to be changed. So people had quite sensibly said, use a pen. But this has been turned into another mocking cartoon. Here's the Telegraph being more serious, or perhaps not. Theresa May with a nice pyramid behind her head for anybody who finds that of significance. But the whole image is of sort of cartoon land. Meanwhile, perhaps we get a bit of truth from The Guardian, because what they are pointing out is that whatever happens, Brexit is looking shaky. And this one I felt very interesting, that it says the government, while promising it would make a generous offer, could also be headed for a conflict with the EU over the rights of 3.5 million EU nationals who have made their lives in the UK and the 1.2 million Britons who've settled overseas. And apparently we're still going to have to kowtow to the European Union in order for this situation to be sorted out. So Brexit, Mike, utter lie, as indeed you've always said.
Nearly 2 years.
Now. Nearly 2 years, yeah.
Yes. Okay, let's change the subject and move on to more serious issues. We had meant to cover this yesterday, but ran out of time, so we'll do it now. CNN yesterday were reporting this as an exclusive. US suspects Russian hackers planted fake news behind the Qatar crisis. And they're saying US investigators believe Russian hackers breached Qatar's state news agency and planted a fake news report that contributed to a crisis among US closest Gulf allies, according to US officials briefed on the event and the investigation. The FBI recently sent a team of investigators to Doha to help the Qatari government investigate the alleged hacking incident. That was, again, according to unnamed Qatari and US officials. They say intelligence gathered by the US security agencies indicates that Russian hackers were behind the intrusion, first reported by the Qatari government 2 weeks ago, again, said by unnamed US officials. Patrick, the US seems to have a lot of unnamed officials.
Yeah, so this is an exclusive by CNN, a really loud exclusive. And I think running point on this is Evan Perez. His title with CNN is the justice correspondent. So this is amazing. What you have here is a fake news story about fake news. So this is CNN accusing the Russians of hacking Qatari media outlets and planting fake stories that have caused an international diplomatic rift between Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Unbelievable. Yeah, it's absolutely unbelievable. Did it happen? No, this is fake news. So they have no evidence, nothing produced, and no motive, no evidence, no nothing. But this just goes into that basket of Russian hacking conspiracy theories that are being pushed by the United States. If anything, I would think the U.S. would have done the hacking on this one, because this spat between Qatar and the GCC, or Qatar against Saudi Arabia and the UAE, for instance, has been going on for quite some time. It's been built for quite some time. And what you'll find behind both parties is the United States themselves. So for whatever reason, they're setting these Gulf countries against each other in order to sort of draw the battle lines against Iran, probably.
So we have this one side of the pincer movement, and then we have another side to the pincer movement on the attack on Russia here. And this is The Intercept. And the headline is Top Secret NSA Report Details Russian Hacking Effort Days Before the 2016 Election. This was published at about the same time as the CNN report. And this says Russian military intelligence executed a cyber attack on at least one US voting software supplier and sent spear phishing emails to more than 100 local election officials just days before last November's presidential election, according to a highly classified intelligence report obtained by The Intercept. And they go on to say that they had passed a document to the NSA for comment. What's interesting about this, Patrick, is that they didn't pass a copy of the document or a document which contained the text from the original document. They passed the original document for comment. As some people on Twitter were pointing out, The Intercept should be ashamed of itself. Matthew Cole burns yet another source. It makes your entire organization untrustworthy. Do you think that criticism was over the top?
No, technically. So that's John Kiriakou, who did 2 years in a federal prison for whistleblowing, basically, ex-CIA, I believe. I don't think he's over the top at not. That's a totally worded comment. So there's The Intercept. This is Glenn Greenwald's, who's fronting this organization. This is actually not a real media outlet. A lot of people see The Intercept's articles all over the internet, and they think, well, this is a media outlet. It's not. It's subsidized by a billionaire, the founder of eBay, Pierre Odermeyer, who bankrolled this project. Okay, so this is not like a real commercial media outlet. This is completely subsidized. It has a total political agenda, and a lot of people believe The Intercept is a limited hangout. In other words, they hang stuff out there and hang people out to dry through these fake leaks. Okay, this is a perfect example there's nothing in this story. Russia sending, even if it's true, Russia sending phishing, like the Russian government would be sending Nigerian scam phishing emails around a few days before the elections to achieve exactly what? But even if it was true, it's totally inconsequential in terms of the election or the results of the election or anything like that. So it's a nothing story. So they made the headline, they made the story into the leak itself was the story, okay? So I totally question what the Intercept is as an organization. How many, sorry to say this, how many spooks are working in the Intercept, okay? Because by now there's plenty of these stories to go around that have been produced by the Intercept. CNN is basically the mouthpiece of the Pentagon. It's the mouthpiece of the CIA. Everybody knows that. But a lot of people don't realize, you know, who exactly is working at the Intercept. What exactly is their modus operandi? Because they put out some interesting stories. They put out a few things here. Then they put out this, which is complete propaganda, which is designed to lead people ultimately into helping this kind of overall project of demonizing Russia, basically. Okay, and they allegedly burned their source. I'm not even convinced if their source is not part of the gag itself.
Well, in fact, that may be the case, because when we go and look at who the source is, it's this young lady, 25 years old, whose name apparently is Reality Winner. So I'm not sure what to make of this at all, Patrick. The CNN article here says the family of an intelligence contractor who allegedly leaked a highly classified document about Russian interference in the U.S. election told NBC News she would not jeopardize anyone's safety. Reality Winner, a 25-year-old who worked for the National Security Agency, has been charged with providing the report to The Intercept, an online news organization. Apparently she was tweeting under the name Sarah Winners, but in fact she isn't working directly for the NSA. She's working for a subcontractor called Pluribus International Corporation. Now, I haven't come across this name. The name does strike a ring a bell in my head, but I can't remember where I've heard it before, so I don't know too much about them at the moment. But it does raise another interesting question. First of all, is she real? And I'm dubious about that. But the other question is, Pat, do you have any idea to what degree the NSA is working with private contractors in this way?
The NSA is many, many, many subcontractors. Many companies are contracted by the NSA to do work. Also, the CIA outsources many, many departments and jobs by private contractors. And not only that, the NSA, if this will make your head spin, the NSA could be outsourcing to a contract company that's actually a CIA front company, and possibly maybe even someone in the NSA wouldn't be aware of this, or maybe they would, but in terms of the public, it's completely opaque, basically. So this is what the United States has become. It has become an absolute silver honeycomb of secrecy, subcontractors, privatized command structures, falling under the umbrella of massive government agencies with pretty much an unlimited budget to cause all sorts of mayhem. Look at this story. There's nothing in it. It's a non-story. What's the effect of this story? Makes Trump look bad and demonizes Russia, makes Russia look like they're hacking. On the day that James Comey is testifying in front of on Capitol Hill, give me a break.
Yeah, absolutely.
How obvious is it?
Absolutely. Reality Winner.
Reality Winner. Well, I think it's pretty obvious. Let's jump to the BBC, because, of course, the BBC is now hammering Trump at every opportunity. So here's fired FBI Director Comey asked not to be left alone with Trump. I just took the headlines from this story and encourage people to go and read it themselves, because it's so bad. The Trump-Russia story. The BBC can do it in 199 words. That's pretty impressive. Russia, the scandal Trump can't shake. Remember, this is subheadlines in one article. Comey fired, the shifting explanations. Did Trump fire Comey as part of a cover-up? So the whole story can be put in 199 words, but there's a lot to this story. So 199. Well, that's funny because when we actually pressed the button for 199, they've now written in 200, Mike.
So that would be fake news.
That would be fake news, I think. We just highlight. There it is. 199 becomes 200 words. So why are we interested? Well, it's the story that's dominated Donald Trump's presidency, but it's complicated. So stay with me because this is a very complicated story. Here's the summary. U.S. intelligence agencies believe Russia tried to sway the election in favor of Trump. And now there are several investigations looking into whether anyone from his campaign helped. So that's the summary. It's complicated. And here's the evidence. There is nothing to show collusion. There's nothing to show collusion, but more and more contacts between his staff and Russia have emerged. And then the BBC starts to create the story. So the story's complicated. There is nothing to show collusion. That's the statement. Then the BBC fabricates the story. It is absolutely outrageous. And of course, we've just had license fee, who's the company collecting the license?
Capita
investigating itself over the threatening behaviour of its operatives, but of course they're all innocent. I found the news today, I'm smiling, but it is becoming quite difficult to put any analysis of the news in UK together these days because we are seeing lies, propaganda spin to this fantastic level.
Yeah.
Where do we go? Well, I'll just follow on with this one. So we got part of the BBC's webpage. Here's the dog at the polling station, just to make sure that you're on the serious subjects. But a nice little subliminal in here. This is about a museum of failure. Welcome to the Museum of Failure. And who's on the who's in the circle there? But it's Trump.
Yeah.
So nice little subliminal. Here's President Trump. He's a failure, according to the BBC. And then they get more into it because at the moment they're attacking Trump. But of course, Hillary was completely protected while this excellent senator, Trey Gowdy, was in the congressional committees exposing the lies of Hillary Clinton. BBC reported none of it. This particular gentleman also interviewed Comey and exposed serious weaknesses in what that man said. BBC didn't report it, but now they're reporting because, of course, they can attack Trump.
Absolutely. So the media is going on trial at the weekend on Sunday in Froome, 7 o'clock at the Cheese and Grain. Patrick is speaking along with Vanessa and several others. Do get along to that if you possibly can. It's going to be a very interesting discussion. It begins at 7 p.m.
And I'll just remind people once again, this audio interview that I conducted a little while ago with three individuals talking about what's really happening inside the NHS. And while we are mocking events around the election in UK, this is the reality. People dying. And it's being covered up at the highest level of government. So I encourage you to listen to that interview if you haven't already done it. And now we move on. I just happened to spot this really in The Guardian. Pittsburgh and Paris join over 200 cities and states rejecting Trump on climate. This is very interesting because we're now seeing the city states being advertised wherever possible. I think you've got a bit more on this. This sort of subject, Mike.
Absolutely. So, as you say, this is, I think the slides are in the wrong order here, so we're just going to jump across to this one. So this is from Cities Today, a new data initiative to help cities tackle climate change. And of course, along with there are so many of these types of articles appearing in the press at the moment, many of them containing more of those images of city sort of monuments and city institutions lit up in green, Brian, because we've got to support this whole C40 cities initiative to allow the city states to emerge. So Paris and C40 have teamed up to launch a new initiative that brings together startups, city governments and businesses to design data-based climate change solutions. So we're going to solve the climate issue with a database. That's good stuff. The C40 Climate Leadership Group, a network of 91 of the world's cities committed to tackling climate change, will partner with tech firm Numa to launch Data City C40 in cities around the world. The initiative is based on Data City programs in Paris and Casablanca. Data City Paris helped save up to 10% on the city's annual street lighting electricity bill and cut greenhouse gas emissions by analysing data on street usage to identify off-peak times when the lights could be dimmed. So that's great, isn't it? Okay, so basically, it's all about smart cities and whatnot. I'm sorry I've got these in the wrong order, so we will jump. Yes, Patrick, yes.
I just want to make one comment. Don't you think that's a sort of like political virtue signaling by the cities? Because really what they're trying to do is paint themselves in some sort of a political light to make them seem like, you know, maybe better than they are.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. So let's move on to the Brookings Institute, because it's pushing exactly the same agenda. The headline here is Legacy Infrastructure and the Challenge of Procuring Urban Resilience. They're saying that despite the enormous expense, significant infrastructure repair or replacement also represents a major opportunity. Over the coming years, cities of every size have a once-in-a-generation chance to shift towards cleaner, greener technologies and create more resilient communities. So now we're not only talking about green agenda, but resilient cities. Even when a city knows what it needs, they say, and how to get it, public procurement processes are often biased against new cross-cutting or resilient solutions. A few cities like Boston, with its Smart City RFI, have taken steps to further innovation in procurement. But for most, knowing how to shop for resilient infrastructure or procurement resilient solutions is still a challenge. So remember, we're still talking about sort of green issues here. And you'll notice there's some nice purple on that Brookings Institute.
The colour of kings.
The colour of kings, but it's not just the colour of kings, because it's also the colour of common purpose. So we'll skip over the wrong slide here. And we'll go to the common purpose website, how smart cities can combat climate change. So if anybody thinks that this agenda has been sparked off simply by Donald Trump deciding that he's going to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement, that is not the case. This has been driving for quite a long time. And the fact that Donald Trump chose to take the action that he did has been jumped on as an opportunity, as the Brookings Institute say, as an opportunity for this agenda to take a massive step forward. This has been driven by Common Purpose for years now. And they're talking about smart cities, they're talking about resilient cities. And this is linked to the 100 Resilient Cities Project, which was pioneered and financially supported by the Rockefeller Foundation. The 100 Resilient Cities Project is, as they quote, dedicated to helping cities around the world become more resilient to the physical, social and economic challenges that are growing part of the 21st century. And of course, part and parcel of this, Patrick and Brian, is terrorism, because terrorism provides a need for resilience. And this is part of what's driving the Resilient Cities program as well. And as they say, crisis is the new normal for cities in the 21st century because of the collision of globalization, urbanization and climate change. Not a week goes by that is not disruption to a city somewhere in the world by a cyber attack, a natural disaster or economic or social upheaval. So London was amongst the original group of cities that was selected to join the 100 Resilient Cities project. And I believe, in fact, it was amongst the second group. This Common Purpose blog post here, How Smart Cities Can Combat Climate Change, was written by a lady called Catherine Cameron. I'm not sure that there's any relationship there. I don't think there is. And she says that city mayors can be more nimble than state or national level politicians and need to act fast to stay in office so they get results. And so it goes on. Well, let's have a look and see what Boris Johnson had to say about this when he was mayor of London. He said that this Rockefeller developed initiative, the 100 Resilient Cities Programme, will deliver significant financial support and access to world leading expertise. So that's great. Now, let's just put this in a little bit of context. The late Benjamin Barber, who passed away a couple of months ago, Benjamin Barber, who originated the Global Parliament of Mayors and has been pushing the city-state agenda for years, he said that democratic institutions all over the world are in trouble as an increasing number of people no longer believe in them. In this scenario, cities need to be brought to the centre of the political order. Mayors all over the world have a common purpose when it comes to tackling law and order, terrorism, and climate change. And so, Patrick, what we start to see here is the main policy, globalist policy agendas working together to forward another major policy agenda, which is the city-state's policy agenda. We see chaos, terrorism, climate change being used as the excuses. And alongside that, we see this new form of governance, which subverts the democratic process as we understand it should be, subverts nation states. And what are we going to be left with?
This is a perfect example of a problem, reaction, and a solution. So the establishment themselves have created a problem in the sense of distrust of governments. He's talking about the democratic institutions all over the world are in trouble because people don't trust them. And why don't they trust them? Where does the corruption come from? Does it come from the electorate or does it come from the political bodies and the persons in politics? Of course, it comes from the politicians. It comes from the establishment. Where does the corruption in the press come from? This comes from state involvement in the media at the editorial level. This comes at the propaganda level. This comes at the corporate level. So here we have the same people sponsoring the Global Cities Initiative or the Global Parliament of Mayors are the ones themselves that have undermined democratic institutions all over the world now for decades. So they've created the problem. They're going to manage the reaction, and they've just handed you the solution on a silver plate, and they want you to then accept that. And so they've rationalized it like Benjamin Barber has. But we know what's caused this in the first place. So why would we trust the same establishment who's undermined democratic institutions to then provide us with this new solution, the city-state solution? That's the question to ask everybody.
Absolutely.
Well, somebody said in our chat room, Rockefellers, well, we can trust them for a benevolent program. Well, I don't think so. But of course, if we talk banking, we're back to the subject of wars. This is just a little really interjection. But yesterday we pointed out that we got British Special Forces operating on the ground. This was a report from the Times, and it was talking about the Raqqa, the attack on Raqqa. And we said, isn't it interesting? British Prime Minister had said there would be no British boots on the ground in Syria. That, of course, now turns out to be a total lie. But we were poking a stick at these operations. Now, we don't doubt the bravery of the men and the women who get involved in these organisations. What we're saying is they shouldn't be there. We just found it remarkable that having mentioned what was going on with Special Forces, the Mail today has suddenly got a whole heap of photographs which have been coloured. They were originally black and white and they've been coloured very cleverly. But basically, when you go through this, these are British Special Forces. Sorry, the caption there is for this photograph, French Special Forces. So I detected a little bit of manipulation of people's minds because we're saying, no, 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 you should get in and support these people. And of course, it's not just British, it's French as well. I believe that this is a little bit of a spin to head us back towards the fact that we're moving very quickly towards the unification of European armed forces, Mike.
Absolutely.
I don't think this was a coincidence.
Okay, well, let's move to Syria quickly then. And this was from yesterday, breaking: Syrian Air Force bombs US allies in Raqqa province. What did that lead to? So what it says here is that Thursday morning, the Syrian Arab Air Force conducted numerous sorties across North Syria, targeting positions held by enemy combatants. Sorry, and they were targeting ISIS, particularly ISIS positions in the governorate of Raqqa. A couple of airstrikes, unfortunately, seemed to hit the Syrian Democratic Forces, which I believe are Kurdish, they are a staunch ally of the US-led coalition. And this led the US then to bomb the Syrian army in response. The US said that the airstrikes on the Syrian convoy were what they called force protection. I'm not quite sure. We'll ask Patrick in a second what his thoughts are, but not quite sure which force was being protected. Was it the Kurdish force or was it ISIS? Not quite sure. Mattis said that the Syrian allied forces appeared to have been directed by Iran, Patrick, Syria's closest ally in the Middle East, but it's unclear whether there were actually Iranian units among the forces that were struck. Lavrov he waded into this discussion and he said that the US action was illegitimate, it was unlawful, it was the latest gross violation of the sovereignty of the Syrian Arab Republic. The US claiming that this was a deconfliction zone and that that Russia understood that it was a deconfliction zone. Russia saying absolutely not, there is no formal agreement. So this gets more dangerous by the day, Patrick, of potentially a direct interface between Russia and the United States, perhaps.
Yeah, and well, I was speaking about this with a Canadian broadcaster last night on a news segment. And so what the United States is doing here is they're taking advantage of the situation. It's a situation which they've carefully crafted over the last few years to the point where they now have assets on the ground inside Syria and U.S. assets and proxy assets. The Syrian Democratic Forces are a militia that was just contrived by the United States. It was just given a logo. It was given a name and it was given some money and some weapons, and it's basically Kurdish militia who are there already. Okay, so what James Mattis, if you flash, I don't know if you can flash his picture back up there again, but James, General Mattis, I mean, this man is somebody who allowed himself to be used as a political prop by Donald Trump before and or so right before and after the election, okay, to somehow shore up confidence in Trump's ability to govern. And James Mattis and people like him, David Petraeus, they have basically presided over the biggest military failure, the biggest foreign policy failure in United States history. They themselves are part of that failure. General James Mad Dog Mattis, whose name is attached to things like the Haditha massacre, like Fallujah, like the Abu Ghraib prison scandal. Okay, and so he's rewarded for all his great part in all these failures as the defense, the head of the Defense Department in the United States. And so he claims because he read a few books on the Peloponnesian Wars and Sun Tzu's Art of War that he's some sort of philosopher, warrior, monk. Okay, what he's doing is basically trying to bait parties into a wider war, and whether Iran has forces in Syria or is none of America's business, because they're there at the invitation of the sovereign state of Syria. So it doesn't matter if they're Iranian or if they're Chinese or if they're from Uganda. Okay, they're in there with the Syrian army under the supervision of the Syrian government. And it's none of the business of the United States. What they're trying to do is frame this in terms of Iran is axis of evil. So wherever Iran is, then it's open season for war. So the United States is playing a very dangerous game. They're trying to bait Russia. They're trying to bait Iran. They're trying to create a situation where an American plane will be shot down or an American soldier will die. And then it'll be Willie Schuman again, like in Wag the Dog. And they'll use that to rally Americans behind a wider military operation in Syria and in the Middle East as a whole. This is a complete fraud, and General James Mattis is right at the front of it.
Pretty dangerous.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Pat. Well, what can we say? You have the opportunity, we have the opportunity to go out and vote today. We know that it's a poison chalice, but our view is very much that the people who at the moment are pushing the wars, they're helping to break up the Middle East in particular. This is in turn helping to fuel the terrorism. This comes straight back to the recent policies of David Cameron. And of course, Theresa May and Michael Fallon are very much pushing this. So if we put them back into power, we can expect the situation in the Middle East to inflame. We can expect more terrorism on the back of the actions of the British government. And what will happen at home, we will see a massive increase in this police state that Theresa May is clearly desperate to bring in. So our advice is this, which is let June be the end of May, but do go out and vote. Choose somebody. Do not vote Conservative. Choose somebody from one of the other parties, particularly if there's any sign that they're decent people. Because what we need to do is buy time. That's it from us for today. We'll be back for some interesting analysis tomorrow. Patrick, thanks very much for joining us. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.